Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Outdoor Living Hour of Rosie on the House. Have a happy Memorial Day weekend.
Oh,
gotta start every hour this morning with Memorial Day. It's important to remember and to reflect. So we'll talk some more in the 9 o'clock hour. We have some good thoughts on Memorial Day. But this hour, we have a special guest, Greg Peterson of the Urban Farm. Good morning, Greg.
Hey, thanks for having me again. I love this.
We love having you. I think it's been about once a month. And last time you were in, we talked chickens.
I know. I love the intro. Thank you very much.
Yes, walking into the garden. Let's get outside this morning. We also have you brought with you Kari Spencer of the Micro Farm Project. Good morning, Kari.
Good morning, Jennifer.
And you've been in with us before, too. And last time you were in, we talked goats.
We talked dairy goats.
Dairy goats. You guys are just a wealth of information. So thanks for coming in this morning. Greg, what do you want to talk about today?
Oh, let's talk about what do you do with all that stuff that you grow in your yard? This time of year, it's peppers and tomatoes and apricots and apples and peaches. It's like, what do we do with it all?
Don't want it to go to waste after all that work and investment of time.
Right. And Kari does a lot of talking about this. It's really important to actually have a plan.
Plan.
Before this stuff arrives.
Good idea.
Because I can't tell you how many times over the past, 20 plus years at the Urban Farm, it's like I get all this bounty and it's like I didn't have a plan.
And then you're trying to give it to your coworkers and your neighbors and they've got some maybe already.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then, you know you're really in trouble when they no longer answer the door when you knock, right?
You leave it on the door and run.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what are some tips for?
First segment today.
Okay.
All about canning.
All right.
So, and the second segment, we're going to talk about pickling and fermenting.
Okay.
The third segment, we've got dehydrating. And the fourth segment, we're going to talk about freezing and that kind of stuff. So canning is actually a really easy process.
Are you serious?
It is. And there are two ways to can.
Okay.
Yeah. There is water bath canning that anybody can do with not a whole lot of equipment. Mm-hmm. And there's pressure canning, which you actually need a pressure canner for. Not a pressure cooker, but a pressure canner. They're two different things.
Yep.
And you can can a whole lot more with a pressure canner than you can with a water bath canner.
So, and by more, you mean more variety.
More varieties, yes.
Okay.
Yes, water bath canners are for high acid foods, things that have a pH of less than 4.6.
Such as
citrus. So making marmalades and things like that with citrus, canning tomatoes, although some tomatoes we add a little bit of vinegar to just to make sure, canning pickles and things like that that have a lot of acid. Those can be done really simply just in boiling water in a water bath canner.
And what that looks like is, those big, I have an aluminum one, they're these monster tub pots. And you just start boiling water in it, and then there's these nice, I call them canning tweezers, that you just lower the canning jars into the boiling water. Actually, you start it when they're not boiling.
And those kettles actually have an insert that holds the jars. Do you use that?
Oh, yeah.
You can buy those.
Yeah, you can definitely get those.
We do some canning way with the water bath, and it's usually, we're down to just doing the prickly pear. So in the fall, we harvest our prickly pear, we juice it, and then we water bathe it. And, we do different things, different recipes, but that's the extent of our canning these days. But when you buy those, where do you find those? Like at Walmart, hardware stores?
Hardware stores. I always love walking into a hardware store, like our buddy's Barry's down here on 12th Street. Mm-hmm. And, they have a whole canning section.
Yeah.
It's like, booyah. Yeah.
I love buying mason jars, new fresh mason jars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we've talked about what kind of things you can put in there.
Right.
Okay.
So then there's pressure canning. And I actually prefer pressure canning.
It sounds so scary.
That's what, I said to Kari the other day, it's like, why doesn't everybody use a pressure canner?
Well, they used to be a little bit more dangerous than they are today. If you buy a new pressure canner that was made in the last decade or so, they're very safe. And a lot of them are digital. So you don't really have a whole lot of guesswork, which there was a little bit of guesswork before. So if you can get a digital pressure canner, it's a great investment, and we do canning all the time. In fact, I brought in today some chicken that we actually canned.
Oh, wow.
I found a whole bunch of organic chicken on sale, and so I canned it up instead of sticking in the freezer because my freezer was full.
Full, yeah.
Yeah, and so I can keep that chicken on the shelf without using any refrigeration. And you cannot do that with a water bath canner. You have to have a pressure canner.
And why is that? Because the heat is that much more intense?
The heat in a water bath canner does not get high enough to kill the botulism organism that can make people sick. Yeah. And in low acid or in, high acid foods, we don't have to worry about the botulism organism. But in something that is alkaline, like meats, then we do need to make sure we kill that botulism.
What else besides meats needs to go in that pressure cooker?
I can a lot of veggies. Yeah. In the beans and corn and things like that in the pressure canner.
You couldn't do those in a water bath? Or it's better, it's still just one of those things better in?
Yeah, that's really the case. You want to be safe here.
Yeah.
Definitely want to be safe. And for me, the scary part is actually canning something and have it not be done right.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the lesson, is just do it right in the first place. And that's why I go with the pressure canner.
Can I ask you about that pressure canner?
Sure.
So my mom scared me to death of those as a kid. Those, mm-hmm. They were like this bomb sitting on the stove. Stay out of the room, you know. So, and then I started going to Char's, Bosch Kitchen Center down in Mesa. And I bought a small little canner for, it's called an empty nester. Get it? So, but I still am a little afraid of it, but it's just great. But I still have to stand there and release the pressure. It has a little indicator when the pressure is too high and you release it.
Oh.
Explain to me what it looks like when you use that pressure cooker. Are you having to stand right there? Do you set a timer and go do something else?
My electronic one, I can just walk away from it. Yes. But if I need to open it, for some reason, then you do have to use that pressure release button, and the steam comes pouring out. So you can't be standing right over it. You have to just push the button with one little finger and stand back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So you are talking pressurized hot water.
Right.
So it gets the temperature inside the pressure canner gets hotter. And so you just have to be cognizant of that. Make sure that you're being appropriate about that. My pressure canner is an old style canner. It's not digital, and it's got a little metal thing that sits on top of the air pressure relief valve. Mm-hmm. It says 5, 10, and 15 pounds. And so when it gets to 10 pounds, if it's on the 10-pound setting, it just, you know, lets off some steam.
By itself. And this is one you would just put on a stovetop because it's not electric or anything.
Exactly.
It's just an old
one. Just sits on a stovetop. So yours doesn't go on a stovetop, the digital one?
It does not go
on
electric,
a stovetop. It's electric, she said. So you plug it in?
I just plug it in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, sounds pretty fancy.
Much easier.
Wow, I'm living 20 years ago.
Speaking of 20 years ago, if you're using old canning recipes,
yes,
they're great. I love vintage recipes.
Yep.
But you really need to look at them carefully and make sure that they follow the latest USDA guidelines for safety. And if you do that, then canning is very, very safe for eating. And you can find out those guidelines at the National Center for Home Food Preservation, which is at nchfp.uga.edu.
I'll put those up on Facebook in a little bit. That's cool. A great. That kind of, when I read that, I thought, what does that mean if I pull out this old canning book I have in my cupboard from 1982, right? So I can't just pick it up and assume I can have the right. Have you got? You brought an old one too.
I got an old one too. It's my old Stocking Up, you know, by Rodale Press.
Okay.
But 1977.
So do you cross reference it with the
Cross references. Mm-hmm. Absolutely cross references.
So there's probably been changes in length of time and temperature and.
Yeah, you just want to make sure you're up to date on that. And you know, I have there's the ball canning jars is still around. There's a real nice. They do interestingly enough, a yearly can off around the country, and they broadcast it live. It's really cool.
Have you participated?
We did some podcasts with them last year.
Oh, fun.
I told them this year that I wanted to be one of the on-air canners, so we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll have to put a little link on Facebook if you do that. It sounds like fun.
There you go.
And canning, you know, so maybe I'm old school in this. Maybe it's something you need to update me on. But when you take those jars out of the water bath, you wait for that little pop, and the center of the lid, there's two pieces to the lid, the top and then the ring.
Yep.
And that center piece should go down.
It sucks
in. You should
in.
Hear it pop.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
So
best
is that still
sound
the,
when
is that the, I know. Pop,
oh,
pop, pop,
yep,
pop.
Yep, exactly.
So is it still the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And then what do you do with any of them that don't pop?
If they don't pop, I will either put them back in the canner and reprocess them, or I'll just stick them in the fridge, and those are the ones I eat first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So people shouldn't be afraid of canning. It's you just got to go through the steps. So you go through the steps, and voila, you have canned stuff. In fact, I actually learned how to can in 1978. I was talking to a friend of mine. I was 17, 18 then, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, man, I really need to know how to can, because I had planted some of my first peach trees here in the valley back then.
So this is a passion that started very young for you.
Oh, yeah. I had all these peaches, and, I didn't know what to do with them. So Tim said, my mom will teach you how to can. So I learned from Tim's mom how to, I can't even remember her name, except she was Tim's mom.
I don't know many 18-year-olds who know how to can, right? So you've continued. Have you been doing it all this time then?
Well, and here's what I tell people all the time, that there's the only place this notion of lack lives is between our ears. Because when I look out at the abundance that lives in my yard, right now I'm looking at probably 400 pounds of apples.
Oh, overload. So what are you going to do? I guess we'll talk about that through the course of the morning. We can apply those apples probably to each segment here, right?
Absolutely, yeah. We can.
So you don't have to eat it all the same way.
Applesauce.
Applesauce? Okay. Yeah. All right. So next segment, we're going to come back. We've kind of covered the canning, mm-hmm. preserving by a pressure cooker or water bath.
Yep.
We've told you where to find the current regulations.
Yep.
So we're going to get y'all plugged in on that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to come back and talk about pickling and fermenting.
Yes.
That's really kind of the new up and coming.
It really is.
But it's also back to old. I mean, it's an old thing
exactly.
that has come back around again.
There's a lot of people out there that are doing it.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Living Hour. Rosie on the house.
Man, do you know me about music? Thank you.
That's Mike's specialty, is finding what makes people's head nod. So
I've got a lot of experience, and if I see a little head nod, you got me.
It provides energy for the studio.
Nice.
So Rosie is just finishing up his Grand Canyon hike.
Oh,
for Memorial
nice.
Day weekend.
Wondered where he was at.
Yeah, that's his annual trek. And then Romy is in Prescott with the last junior
rodeo
of the year. And the girls are killing it.
Oh, good.
And Remy, at 3 years, or he's four, is riding his little white steed, Nibbles, who's probably all of 3 foot tall.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's a picture to behold. Romy leads him every bit of the way. It's pretty
right.
cool. So Grandma's waiting for pictures to come in. So this
proud Grandma.
Yeah, they are so special. So anyway, we have Greg Peterson of the Urban Farm and Kari Spencer of the Micro Farm Project. And we're talking through, you guys are so good at educating us on how to grow things.
Uh-huh.
So I really like this aspect of it. So you've got it grown now. What do you do with it? You don't want to waste it.
Right.
You eat tomatoes till they come out your ears or whatever you've had success with. You want to make sure that you're still interested in it after so much of it. So
right,
we're going to do different things with it to keep it going. So we just went through the canning process.
Right.
And now what's your next step?
Well, I just want to throw out there, canning is, the canning process is simple. Before that, to get the stuff ready to go in the jars, you just get a recipe. If you want to make applesauce, you just get an applesauce recipe. You make a big bowl of applesauce, put it in the jars, can it, and you're done. Same with peaches, and say you do prickly pears. So that the first half of the canning process is actually just a recipe.
Okay.
So
okay.
And then pruning, pickling, and fermenting is what we're up to next. And that it's something that's really exploding out there.
It's everywhere, and it's old school, but it's new school too, right?
Right. Exactly.
It is, and there's two ways to pickle. You can make relishes and refrigerator pickles with vinegar. And those we just stick in the fridge, or you can them in a water bath canner, and it works great. But a lot of people really want to actually ferment those pickles, not just make them taste pickle-like, but make actual, real, authentic pickles with all of the lactobacillus that ferments them, which is really good for our bodies. It's probiotic.
Mm-hmm.
And so to do that, it's very easy. It's just like Greg said, following a recipe. If you can follow a recipe, you can pickle.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't just have to pickle cucumbers. You can pickle almost anything.
Eggs?
You can pickle eggs.
Eggs, yep.
You can pickle, if you have, some produce that's you don't know what to do with, even if it's a squash, you can pickle it.
Hold on. Didn't you tell me the other day you pickled watermelon rinds?
Pickled watermelon rinds. I had all these watermelon rinds, and I was thinking, wow, look at all this waste. What do we do with this?
What a great idea.
So I looked online, found a recipe to pickle watermelon rinds, and they were delicious.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. But we do have a caller, Miss Sandra. I'd like to bring her in, let her ask you her question. She has a question about her peaches.
Oh, all right. Bring it.
Hey, Miss Sandra, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. Well, what's your question for Greg?
Last year, I planted a new peach tree. It was, I can't remember the name of it, but it was formulated in formula and supposed to do well on the desert. And I tell you what, this thing has grown about 3 feet in 1 year.
Right.
And it actually is, I took off what was left after the birds finished with my peaches.
Uh-huh.
And I had about 75. So, I mean, it's not even a year old, and it really put them out. But for next year, I'm wanting to know how to protect the peaches from being consumed by all the birds.
Got it. So a question we get a lot this time of year is what to do about the birds. So the simple answer is I use tulle, T-U-L-L-E, wrap the tree in tulle. That keeps the birds away. The other thing is that fruit trees need about 3 years of growing before they actually produce fruit. So if a fruit tree is producing the first year, it's taking away from its growing. And so I really tell people to remove all the fruit the first year. I know it makes people panic, but you have, especially the first year.
Who would know that? Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Before it ripens.
Before it ripens.
And so it puts its energy into the growth then.
Yeah.
And do you do anything to control the height?
Yeah, you can do some pruning so you can actually get the tool over it.
Right, and be able to pick it and harvest it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you for that answer. I know there's a lot of people that sometimes when you're growing things, you feel like you're just feeding the animals, and that can be pretty frustrating.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
Kari,
let's finish. Let's keep talking about this fermenting idea. So the difference between just maybe putting pickles or cucumbers in vinegar and putting them in fermenting, what's the big difference? Is it the lacto, whatever
you call
it?
It's the lactobacillus. And so you can make a quick pickle just with vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there are lots of recipes for that. And they taste like pickles. They're delicious, yummy. Nothing wrong with making those. I make a lot of them. But if you want to have those probiotics, then that takes longer because you have to allow it to ferment, and that takes time.
All righty.
And there's some great books about fermenting out there on the market. You know, this is something you need to go learn. And it's a little bit more complicated than canning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you'll give me some good resources, and I'll post those for our listeners.
Perfect.
Okay. When we get back, we're going to talk more ways to preserve all that wonderful produce that you have grown.
One of my favorites.
Moving to the country, I'm going to eat a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat me a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches.
Oh,
lip syncing too. Okay, I tell you what, next time Greg is in, we are doing the Facebook Live thing. And we're going to demonstrate how Mike's music gets us going.
All right, good. That completely works. I love it.
Okay, we're back with Greg Peterson, Urban Farm, Kari Spencer, Micro
Farm Project.
Thank you, Micro Farm Project.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about fermenting. Just want to clarify a few things. There's safety things to consider.
That's correct. And it's not just about safety, but also about flavor. You want to attract the lactobacillus organism and not molds and other yeasty things that aren't good that will ruin your pickle. So the main thing to prevent that is just to make sure that everything's clean and sterile. So if you have a pickling recipe, it's probably going to tell you how to do that. And you want to follow the directions for making those fermented pickles exactly. And, you know, occasionally it goes wrong, even for the best of us, and that's okay. If you notice that it's getting moldy or something, that's fine. Just just start over, do something else.
Yeah, it's like everything, you have to do it some to know. And so the big difference then, when you're making pickles, you're going to make the recipe and you're going to water bathe it if you want to preserve it. If you're fermenting something, that is the preservation. And if you do water bathe it or pressure cook it, you're going to pressure can it, you're going to kill what you've just worked so hard to create.
That's correct. Our ancestors used fermenting so that they could preserve foods without any refrigeration. And so there was no canning back in the old days. And so if you ferment, you do not want to water bath or pressure can your goods, because then you kill all those good probiotics. And they will stay on the shelf without any need for canning them.
Okay. So we've got the fermenting. Mm-hmm. We've got the canning. So what's next?
Dehydrating. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's so simple, and it takes something and reduces it by 30 to 80%.
Size wise,
yeah.
So you can store it. Doesn't take so much room to store.
Easily stored, and right now we're getting ready to do apple chips for the next year. In fact, I just last month ate my supply of apple chips from last year.
Oh, yeah? So yeah. And you were just keeping those bagged on your shelf?
I actually stick them in the freezer.
Do you? Okay, yeah, I just pull out the bags.
Bag them, okay. Yeah, and I store them in the freezer. We're going to talk about freezing the next segment.
Okay, well, let's talk through the different ways that you would dehydrate. I've tried a couple different ways. I haven't had a ton of success, mm-hmm. So tell me how you do it.
Well, really, dehydrating is dehydrating. It's the different kind of dehydrators that you can use.
Mm-hmm. You can buy an electric dehydrator, and there are some that force air horizontally and some that force it up from the bottom. Mm-hmm. And, you could pick one of these up online. You could pick one up probably even at a thrift store if you just wanted to give a shot and see how it worked.
Yeah.
And so an electric dehydrator is really handy to dehydrate things really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And they just use air. They just blow air over the food and keep it at a nice low temperature, because one of the points of dehydrating is you don't want to heat it up and cook it. You just want to dry it out.
Right.
But that being said, you can dehydrate in the oven. Just make sure that you're at the lowest temperature possible in your oven and keep an eye on it.
Put a sticker on there so nobody comes by and bumps it for broiling or something, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, and the big problem with ovens is that, generally what 170 is the low temperature.
That's right. And you really need to be 140.
Yeah.
So not the best option.
Not the best option.
But, we live in a desert here in Phoenix, and I was just spending some time with a friend of mine yesterday. She's Lebanese and her mom makes grapes. And she said she just puts a ladder between two chairs and puts some trays on it, puts all of the grapes out there and covers them with tulle netting and just lets them dry outside in the sun. No power, no equipment needed.
Nice.
And we really can do that here. A lot of things I don't use the dehydrator for, herbs and things that dry relatively quickly,
mm-hmm.
I just lay them out on a tray and let them go, and they dry within a few days.
Let them go in your house, or you had said
in the
sun.
House, or if I'm going to do it outside, I'll do it in a shady spot with some tulle netting covering so that the flies don't land on them.
Yeah,
and that works really well too.
Yeah.
So you've dried them out. Is there any other things we've missed here?
Apple chips. So there's the apple chips.
Okay.
Apricots. Love. Especially the apricots that grow here. The little Katie and gold-kissed apricots. They are so incredibly prolific. One of my neighbors has an apricot tree in her front yard, and she probably gets 100 pounds of apricots off of it. So I got 50 pounds from her and dehydrated them. I froze some. I'm going to make jam out of them, and then I'll can them. So apricots are great. Tomatoes. What can you do with tomatoes?
Well, you can make tomato chips. You can make dried tomatoes that you can throw in soups and sauces and other recipes.
Oh, yeah.
Or you could make your own sun-dried tomatoes, and after you dry them out, pop them in some olive oil with just a little bit of, like a tablespoon of vinegar, and you've got your own sun-dried tomatoes. You don't have to spend, the big bucks at
they
the grocery
are
store for them.
So are you talking about taking a whole tomato?
You can take a tomato. You can slice it up.
Slice it?
Or even just slice it in half. Dehydrate it. And when it's just almost crispy, put it in some oil in a jar with some herbs and spices if you want. And you've got your own.
That's the million-dollar tip of the morning. Because do you know how much those jars are? I love them.
Oh, I know.
But it's like $4 for a little bitty jar. What is that, like 8 ounces maybe?
Oh, yeah. No, not even 8 ounces.
I've got a jar here, huge jar.
Those are beautiful.
Of tomatoes that I made. This
quart.
This is worth its weight in gold right there.
Yeah. Well, and tomatoes, they you know, there's so much water in them.
Right.
They dehydrate down to almost nothing. Yeah. And so that's it's a great, great way to store things.
I am so excited. So what else we got? We've got, oh, kale chips.
Oh, my gosh. So
everybody hates kale. I hate to tell you. We have a guy at the office who just has, Mr. Stan, he's got a green thumb, and he grows mountains of kale and brings them in. And I'm about the only one that'll eat it.
Right.
But he brings in these huge things. But I've tried some different things. What do you do with it?
Well, one of the things that I love doing with it is I actually dehydrate it down and not into chips but into a powder. And then we put it in soups, and we put it in green drinks, and you know, so you know, and it, when you do it that way, you're not getting a whole lot of taste; you're
right.
just getting the nutrients from it. And the other thing about dehydrating is, if you dehydrate them at a low enough temperature, you're still getting some of the enzymes, and you know, you're still getting some of the good stuff from it on top of the nutrients in it.
Right, all the minerals that are in it. And my kids don't really care for kale salad mm-hmm. very much, but if I make kale chips, they don't even get in the jar before they get eaten because they're so light and crispy, and you can put garlic or just sea salt or whatever you want on them, and they just taste so good.
So you wash up your kale and then dry it real good, or you just throw it out there?
Oh, no, I will cut it into pieces, like 2-inch pieces, make chips, you know, and then just put it in the dehydrator and dry it out. And
do you cut that
delicious.
Spine out?
Oh, yes. Or,
yeah, just the leafy part.
Yes. In fact, the really cool thing about kale is if you do it right, you can actually, in one fell swoop, you grab the kale leaf and strip off the spine.
Well, there you go.
You know, you just kind of start tearing up toward the top of it and just pulling the center spines out.
Well, I really like the idea of drying it and then pulverizing it to death.
Oh, yeah.
And then sneaking it in things. I think I could get my family to eat it that way.
Well, and there's something that grows really well here called tree kale. Mm-mm. It's an amazing plant, and the leaves are bigger than dinner plate, but it puts off these massive leaves, but it's chewier than kale. You know how
Do you know that may be what Stan has, because it is huge leaves, and it's tough.
Yeah, and it's tough, right? Mm-hmm. So I sent a bunch of that to a friend of mine up in Cottonwood recently, and she actually made kale chips out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And see, something like that would make great kale chips because it is a beefier, a beefier leaf. When we try and do kale chips out of, you know, like the standard kale in our yard, it's not beefy enough and it falls apart.
Right.
That's why I go to the powder.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. We're gonna get you healthy this morning, teach you how to get all that good stuff into your system. Right? Hey, I wanted to talk just a minute. You guys both have things going on. Car, you're getting ready to publish a book?
Yes, I am, with 5M Publishing. It'll be coming out this fall. It's called City Farming, How to Grow Food and Raise Livestock in Urban Spaces.
Well, if anybody knows, you do.
That is the case.
Yeah, and I'm getting really excited about it. Yeah. So you can go out to cityfarmingbook.com and kind of keep up on the book. And there's already some information posted there for people who are interested in that topic. And we'll let you know when it comes out. Looking like October, November, probably.
Nice.
Have you finished writing it? You're just waiting for the publishing
process? We're doing all the last minutes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Seems to never end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, editing and all
that. We'll be doing a book signing in the fall with it. And
keep us posted.
Locally.
We'll let everybody know.
Yeah.
I'll be first in line.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
And Greg, you are an educator by heart. Do you ever feel like you're a teacher? I mean, you must.
Well, yeah.
That's what you love to do. You'd love to share this information.
Yeah, I've taught at ASU and... I teach in the neighborhoods, and anybody that'll listen, I'll talk to them about growing your own food, because I believe that the most important thing that we can be doing on the planet right now is learning how to grow our own food.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of anybody who will listen, you have a lot of people listening. Where can people find your information?
Yeah, urbanfarmpodcast.org is my podcast. And we launched it a year and a half ago, and we're getting about 1,500 listens
a day.
It right around
That's
the world.
That's huge.
And just under 50,000 listens a month. So, people are really, really excited about rediscovering, let's say that, rediscovering where their food comes from and how to grow it ourselves.
I know we act like it's all new, but we're just kind of waking up, right?
Exactly.
We're coming back out of the packaged food age. We thought that was so cool and so easy, and now we're realizing, hey, that's really not very healthy, so we need to get back to this
basics.
Yeah,
you know what they call that stuff? They call it foodstuffs.
Foodstuffs?
Yeah, and when you Google foodstuffs, it's basically it says a food-like product.
Food-like
product, yeah.
Like being the key word.
Right, and so, you don't know what's in it, and...
Lots of consequences to that stuff, and preservatives and chemicals to keep it...
Yeah, one food-like product that my kids went through a lot of before I woke up was fruit by the foot. You know that the fruit stuff with the roll-ups. You know,
and you know how to make. When we come back, we're going to talk about the fruit leather.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's all right. Well, my baby's clean out of sight. Don't you know that she's...
Where's my lip syncing? Let's see it, Greg.
I'll even try and sing, but I might hurt people's ears.
Well, Rosie does that too. He just does it real quiet, kind of under the radar.
I won't go under the radar.
All righty. Hey, Greg Peterson and Kari Spencer here with us this morning at Rosie on the House and the Outdoor Living Hour, and we're talking through what to do with all this food that you gather and you grow. So, Kari, we were talking about dehydrating, and you have a way of making that fruit leather. I mean, I see it in the store. It's all over. You can just pick up five for a dollar or whatever. Tell me how you do yours.
Well, it's easy to make, and it costs a lot less than $5 for $1. Yeah. You know, I recently came into about 6 honeydew melons, and I'm like, what am I going to do with 6 honeydew melons before I go bad? So I pureed them up, put some chia seed and a little bit of Greek yogurt into the mix, and spread them out on trays and dehydrated them, and we have honeydew melon fruit leather, enough probably to last us till next summer.
Two questions. Wow. I didn't know you could put dairy in a fruit leather.
You can. You have to be judicious about it, but you can definitely do it. If it dries out, it's fine. You got to make sure it's dry, though.
Yeah,
really
very dry.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what are you using? Using Saran wrap, or what do you have to have something to roll it into, right?
Yeah, yeah. I will take a piece of kitchen parchment paper and lay it out on my dehydrating tray, and then brush it with a little bit of sunflower oil, and then spread the puree on it so that it's thin but not so thin that you can see through it. You make sure it's opaque. You know, you want to spread it out, and then I put in a dehydrator, let it dry, and when it's all dry, I cut those into strips, roll them up, put a piece of tape on them, and put them in a jar.
Just on the shelf in a jar.
Just on the shelf in a jar.
Did they even get to the shelf before the kids get them?
Well, these, when you have 6 honeydew melons, yes.
There's that abundance again.
Yeah.
And just so let's say we have a listener who doesn't have any of the equipment. They're just going to try this out in the air. And you're talking about making sure it's really good and dry. Are we talking about a day, a week?
Well, if you're going to do it out in the air, it depends on how juicy the ingredients were starting out.
Good point.
But it could take up to a week. And
okay.
And in that case, you're going to want to take that tulle netting and tent it so that it's not laying right on top of the fruit leather. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it'll be part of it.
Right. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be eating tulle.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can always build your own as well. I mean, you know, build a wooden box and put a glass top on it and put some venting in it so that air comes up through the bottom and out the top. And, you know, you got your own solar dehydrator. There's plans for them all over the place online.
Solar dehydrator.
Yeah.
That sounds really current as well.
Yeah,
a new slant on things.
There you go.
Okay, so let's talk through freezing.
Yeah.
Do you like freezing?
I do to a point.
To a point.
Yeah, and my to a point is you have to make sure you use it. You know, we froze a bunch of peaches last year and didn't get to them, and right now they're chicken food because they've got freezer burn on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not. You know, freezing requires power and space.
That's true.
That in the freezer, and sometimes you forget about things in the back, and then they're freezer burn, and they're not so good. But they'll last in the freezer 6 months, even up to a year if you wrap them really well. And so it is an option, and it's probably the one that most people are familiar with because we eat frozen foods all the time.
Well, and it's quick. You know, if you don't have a lot of time, you clean it, cut it up, throw it in a bag, throw it in the freezer. Mm-hmm. But I wasted a whole thing of prickly pear juice because I left it in there for a year. I thought it would be fine. I opened it, I was like,
oh yeah.
It just didn't.
Was it in a jar? I've noticed that if we put things in jars, they last longer.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I did. What I did was put them in big Ziploc bags and dried them flat so that they would stack up in there.
Yeah, exactly.
But so if you're going to put it in a jar, you got to leave how much headroom, because you don't want it to.
For liquids, you want to leave at least a third space, depending on what the liquid is, because that can expand tremendously.
Yeah, it can expand. But I'm talking about just like peaches. So they're not liquid.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And actually how I freeze those kinds of things is peaches and apricots, I'll cut them in half, take the pit out, put them on a cookie tray, freeze them overnight, take them out of the freezer, stick them in the jar or the bag. So now it's like an ice cube.
Instead of a clump of
exactly,
peaches.
Instead of a clump, exactly. Yeah. And then just stick them in the freezer that way. It's more space saving.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, you have to be really careful. They freezer burn after a short period of time. And when I say short, you know, 6 months to a year is about the max.
And aren't deep freezes, like a chest freezer, I've heard those are less likely to, well, I think food will last longer in a chest freezer as opposed to one that you're opening on the side of your refrigerator all the time.
Yes, and they're more economical.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's always a good thing. That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
So what if you don't grow your own?
That's the other thing. It's like, you know, if you want a can or dehydrator, what do you do?
Well, there's a lot of options here in the Valley. Okay. You could go to the, you know, standard farmers market trips. There's always produce at the farmers markets, and we have lots of them here in the Valley.
Let me just give a plug to Arizona Farm Bureau. If you go online to fill your plate, they've got all of them listed. And boy, do we have ton.
Yeah.
So in the summertime, they're going to kind of fizzle out a little bit, right, because of the heat.
Yeah.
But that's one great way, farmers markets.
Yeah, I was just at Uptown Farmers Market recently, and you could buy a 10-pound box of tomatoes, which would have been great for dehydrating.
Right.
You know, and it was like $10 or something like that. It was quite reasonable.
My daughter is a recent fan of Sing Farms now that they've reopened, and she comes home with these huge baskets of veggies for a reasonable amount of money.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Okay, so farmers markets, where else?
There's U-Picks. We have lots of farms around Arizona. So if you can go out and look for farms and get on their mailing list and find out when they do the U-Picks. Sometimes at the end of the season, they'll even do a U-Pick where it's kind of like gleaning, getting the last stuff, and that can be really inexpensive. But if you just live in the Valley and you just want to buy a lot of produce all at once, we have some great organizations that distribute produce.
Market on the Move.
Market on the Move. Produce on Wheels without waste. You can get 60 pounds of produce for $10 at their events.
Wow. Yeah.
And a lot of it is organic produce, and a lot of it is locally grown.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Greg Peterson and Kari Spencer. We're going to put your information on Facebook so people can find you and find the information we talked about today. I'm going to take a picture of all that beautiful stuff you brought in, too, so they can see what I got to see this morning.
Nice.
Stay tuned. We got open hour, open lines for you at 9 o'clock here on Rosie on the House.